All right. Good afternoon, everybody. It's Joe. Hope everybody is doing well. Up in D.C. this week, and it's a little bit cold, but some beautiful sunny weather. So we've got a lot to go over today, so we're going to go ahead and get started. And Dina, we're going to start with you. So let me get you on here, and we will get going. All right. Hey, Dina, are you there? Can you hear me?
I am. How are you?
Very good. Just up working with Rhea here in Washington, D.C. And like I said, there's a lot of snow on the ground, and it's a little bit cool, but the sun's out, so it's a good thing. And gosh, the government finally reopened yesterday at 11 a.m., so they were closed Monday and Tuesday. So what have you got, what do you have going on here with your new client? Just kind of instead of I'll just kind of let you pose the question and then let's talk it through.
Yeah, she called me yesterday, because we've been talking. She is a she's a flipper, and she's been doing it for 15 years, so she's very good at what she does. But she's run into some problems where all of her buyers, her investor buyers, are going, "No, we're just going to buy notes now. We're not going to buy any houses. We're just going to buy notes, because that's the hot thing right now." And she's very well versed in notes. She went to one of Larry Goins' weekend things, so she knows about notes, but she doesn't want to market them. She doesn't want to, she just wants to create them and have me deal with them at that point.
Gotcha. That's
And
not
so she called.
a
It's not a bad thing for me at all.
bad thing for you.
She's got this guy who is currently buying two of them. And he's put 50% down, and they finance all their things through Roth IRAs. Well, they haven't paid off the Roth and won't pay off the Roth until the note is sold. And so, can you sell that note as a first position when it's not really first position until the transaction goes through?
Well, here's the thing. And anytime you're working with a Roth self-directed IRA, we've got to make sure that the transaction is done correctly. So pretty much this can all take place simultaneously. So your client is doing this with their IRA, and then the client that is buying the note is buying it in their IRA as well, correct?
I don't know that. I don't know. Whoever's buying the note, I mean, because we haven't found a buyer yet. But so,
What you're saying is your client is buying these in her IRA and you're worried about, and the question is, can you make that work as far as transferring it being a true first lien on the
exactly.
property? Yeah.
Exactly.
Again, I think what you're going to do is this is all going to be done in through the custodian for the IRA. So I would recommend getting a third party as far as a local title company involved to kind of hold the funds and work that through the IRA with the IRA custodian. As long as it's done like that and everybody is aware of what's going on, there shouldn't be a problem there.
Okay.
Now,
Okay.
who does
So,
she
but we should let the seller know that, yeah, we have to pay off a loan with this, and
Right, there's
once that's paid off.
whatever the underlying is, whatever your client owes needs has to be paid off immediately,
Right.
and the funds should be in escrow to pay those off immediately.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, yeah, something occurred to me, and I just who is her IR who is the IRA administrator on her funds?
It's probably American. That's probably who they've got them with, because I think they're local investors, and American's the big one around here that does a lot of
So
real estate deals.
are they
So
very familiar with the note business and how it works?
they no, they are not. And I know she's run this by an attorney, and her attorney is looking it over right now, and I'm not sure how familiar he is with notes either. So
therein lies the challenge, and one of the challenges in our lives, and that is when you're dealing with people that just absolutely have no idea how that works. And I'm certainly not pushing her to change to somebody else, but you know, that's why we recommend Quest and Equity Trust and Mid-Atlantic and Camu Plan, because they understand what we do and they understand how it works. So it may be that there is going to be a learning curve with the closing agent there and her inside her with this American IRA. I'm not really familiar with them, but that's just going to be something that you're going to have to work through. And after you do this a couple of times with this person, it'll become very easy to do. But it's going to take, it's going to be a process to go through and have them understand that. But again, if it's done properly, with you know, the money being held in escrow, so it's immediately paid off and so on, that it shouldn't be an issue as far as with any IRA company.
Okay. I mean, and that's kind of what I told her last night. You know, there's nothing that different about it, because, you know, it's just like paying off any other loan.
Right.
And,
you know, think about it. So what if this was a wrap transaction? What if I had an underlying lien. I sold a house and I owed $40,000 on it, and I sold it for $100 and got $20 down, and we've got an $80,000 wraparound land contract on this. Well, you know, I owe 40, but the loan's 80. So as soon as this transaction is closed, we're going to pay off that underlying lien is going to be paid off, the $40,000. And then by the new lender, whomever it is, and I'm going to get my $40,000, and you know, they're going to have a new lien for $80,000, which is first. So it really is no different than doing a wrap situation as well. There's just that underlying lien, and it would show up on the HUD-1 on the closing statement as well.
Yeah, that's kind of how she was equating it, was a wrap. So she understands that. She's smart cookie. She knows what she's doing. So,
well, she's been doing this for 15 years successfully. She's been around the block,
she knows
what to do on this. So, keep cultivating this relationship, and you know, she may want to, if she has some problems with her IRA company, you know, you may make some recommendations as to how it works with some of the others, with Equity and so on.
Yeah,
but it's an issue, and again, with more people getting into the note space, you could be a champion with this note with American, and it could be that you pick up a lot more business because of this.
Yeah, that'd be great.
You may be doing a little local presentation to some of their clients that have their IRAs there that have, you know, dry cash. And that's where I would push this into the future, is to, once they've gotten a couple of these taken care of, I would push to do some kind of presentation, or certainly, you know, we could do an affiliate agreement with you and we could do something and do a presentation or a webinar for them as well.
Yeah, well, the American guys, when I see them in meetings, they just kind of look at me like, I don't understand you, so don't talk to me. So, you know, they stay away from me because they know who I am. They know I do know. So they're kind of like bumfuzzled. They just don't know what to think.
Well, and you know what it is? The bottom line is that they don't know anything about it, so they feel a little bit threatened by somebody that knows more than they do.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So, again, if there's a lot of pushback there, I would just recommend that that maybe she moves her IRA somewhere else. And the ones that, you know, Quincy at Quest and Equity Trust and all those guys, I mean, they would be happy to speak with her about how that works and so on.
Yeah.
And it may be that she has to change companies, which is not a horrible thing. But they have taken the time to learn the business. Okay.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, that's great.
Very good. Well, listen, keep us posted on that. While you're on the line, let me, let's see, Stu and Tina are on the line, and Stu has a question. Where do we direct our requests for some market stats and slides to use in a presentation for our credibility kit? Stu, Tina, I would certainly go to Zarina on that. She is our resident website wizard, and if it's something that hasn't been created, then certainly she would want to go there and work on creating that. All right, so we'll move on. Okay, keep us in the loop here and let us know how this progresses with this lady. But great job.
I will. We'll let you know.
All right.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Okay. All right. Let's see who we have up next. All right. Looks like we have, I got distracted for a second here. Let me scroll down. All right. Looks like we have Mark Thomas. Mark, let me see if you're on the line so I can get you there. You are. Hey, Mark, how are you? Mark, you there?
Maybe. Can you hear me?
Maybe. Yes, you are there. You are with us.
Excellent.
How's it going, brother?
Very good. Thank you, Joe. How are you doing?
I'm doing, you know, as Dave Ramsey would say, better than I deserve.
That's true. True for all of us, huh?
Gotcha. So explain, Ed, I don't, did you talk with, I know Eddie had sent one response to your email here, but I think it was very short. So talk through what you're doing or what your goal is here, and let's see how this, what this looks like.
Okay, so it's maybe it's a little outside of the box, but in a case where you have a portfolio of notes already standing, it's straightforward. You just send in the credit scores and the portfolio spreadsheet, and you wait for a quote back from Colonial or whoever.
Right.
But in this case, we have we have an investor that has the whole portfolio of properties, and he's trying to sell them as a portfolio. He doesn't want to piece them off and so forth. So we've suggested to a real estate investor who has this portfolio under contract. You know, she's a flipper. She's trying to flip it. We've told her, if you can get the seller to offer seller financing on the portfolio, we can bring a note buyer to closing.
Okay.
But so the rub here is, how do we run the numbers beforehand so that the seller gets an understanding of what his cash away from the closing table might be? So
gotcha.
We're looking at how does the credit score of the buyer affect what a note buyer will pay or what return the note buyer might be looking for? How does the investment to value affect that return number? And how are the properties valued, whether it's via a cap rate in Georgia or some other method of evaluation, so that when we finished our spreadsheet, we have a pretty good idea of what the portfolio seller can expect at closing.
Okay, so my question is, so we've got this is a property owner that over the years has amassed 23 properties, and they want to sell these 23 properties to another investor, and they want a note out of it? Or is this going to be 23 different borrowers? And so what is that, what's the deal with this?
Right. The seller wants cash. So he would assume to sell the portfolio to a cash buyer, but unfortunately, he's had this portfolio on the market for a while, and the cash buyer hasn't come along. But there are plenty of people that would be willing to buy it for no money down or for very little money down. So there's people that need some sort of financing but aren't able to get it from a bank.
Right. So, again, these are going to be 23. These are 23 properties owned by one seller, and that or one owner, and that owner is going to sell all of these to one investor.
Right.
He's not selling 23 properties to 23 different people and creating 23 different notes.
Right. So, well, it could be 23 different notes, but they would still all be purchased by one buyer.
Right. Okay. Here, and I'm assuming that this is many different property types. So there may be some mobile home with land. There may be a duplex. There may be a triplex. Some single family. Is that assumption correct as well?
I'm sure that there's some single family and some multifamily. I'm not sure whether there's a mobile home on land in here.
Okay.
Or not.
Here's the situation, and this, by the way, this is fairly common. I did one of these several years ago where there was a local principal, you know, and his wife that they amassed about 25 properties, and you know, they wanted to sell them to. They had always been rentals for them, and they actually wanted to sell them in one fell swoop and to one guy that wanted to write out a check every month, and he run the rentals, and they're a note owner, and they're passive income. So this is pretty common. And if there's 23 properties, there would have to be 23 different mortgages and notes and so on. The best way for this borrower or this seller to do this is probably going to be they're going to have to do 23 separate mortgages and notes, obviously, but they're going to be all tied up under a master agreement or whatever that would be. Again, for them to sell, as we're talking about, with no money down, then we know that ITV requirements are going to be somewhere around, you know, a max of 70, no matter how you create the loan. So if you create the loans that 15%, then it's still going to be a 70% max investment to value. So if it were $1 million in the sale price was $1 million and there was no money down, well, the best they could expect out of that would be, you know, $700,000, and that would be on a good day. So most likely for this to work, it's going to have to be going to have to find somebody that would be interested in possibly buying a partial on this, so that the discount does not just does not knock their socks off, so to speak, as far as when you're talking about what they're going to sell. Or it could be that maybe they only want to sell the better ones, okay? And maybe it's that, you know, to sell with no money down is probably going to be a non-starter for any note investor out there, whether it's Colonial or FNAC, Federal National Acceptance Corporation, First National Acceptance, or Jeff Armstrong, or whomever it is. That's going to be a non-starter. So I would certainly say that there may be some of those notes that would be sellable, but it's going to be a challenge to sell something like that.
Okay.
Unless, so assuming, again, you had a local investor would be more likely to do something like that. Somebody that's got a chunk of money in their IRA, that type of thing. But again, that's probably going to be the best situation. What kind of sale price? What are these properties worth?
That's a good question. And I don't know at this point.
Right.
I'm basically looking for rules of thumb that I can then crunch in a spreadsheet.
Right. Well, again, it's kind of hard. You would have to take 23 loans, and then if it were different interest rates with one bar, I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be, 23 different loans, but they're all going to be at 8% or 9% or whatever it is, and they're all going to be for – you know, maybe they're amortized for 240 months and they all balloon in 5 years. It really is going to depend, and then what the credit worthiness is on the buyer, a concentration issue as to whether they're in the same place, you know, in the same neighborhood or the same proximity, and then you worry about, well, you know, they're all in, you know, the same geographic location, so what if a, you know, a store closes or a plant closes, and most of these people that live there or renting the houses, they're going to be moving and that type of thing. So, and Lisa Hankinson, she says, you know, what if you sold them off, you know, to four or five different or six different buyers and not just sold them as one package? So, you know, there's a lot of moving parts when you're doing something like this. And of course, the other thing, and I'm assuming they're rentals at this point.
Yes.
Okay. What I would do if I were him is I would go to individual, you know, owners or individual tenants, and if he's got some really good tenants that have been there a while and they've really have a good pay history on these, see if he couldn't sell those to the current tenant. You know, get a little money down on them if he can, season them a few months, and then, you know, sell them. All of this for an investor that's going to be a national investor like Colonial or Fernac or any of these other folks, all of these people are going to want to see, most of them are going to want to see seasoning, okay, anywhere from 3 to 6 months.
Okay. On the credit score side, is all other things being equal, is there a way to kind of know what kind of return a note buyer might be looking for per a given credit score range?
Well,
here, a sliding scale, assuming everything else was virtually perfect and the only thing we were adjusting the interest rate for was credit, what would that relationship look like?
Okay, so obviously, you know, the six factors that are going to affect the value of any note, you know, one is going to be, obviously, is going to be credit, and then what does the collateral look like, and what's the paperwork look like, and what's the term, and what's the interest rate, and all of that is certainly going to make a difference. But if you've got somebody that has a 600 credit score, but they're putting 30% down, that's going to make a whole lot of difference, but that's going to be a whole lot better than you have somebody that has a 675 credit score and they're going to put 5% down. What it's always going to go back to, especially with new notes, is going to be investment to value. And any note investor out there is going to want the borrower to have some skin in the game. So that's always going to trump the other factors there.
Okay, so let me ask the question this way. If you have one buyer who puts 30% down and has a 600 credit score, and you have another buyer who puts the same 30% down but has a 750 credit score, how would the return on investment for the change between those two scenarios?
Well, here's the thing. It really depends on what the term and the interest rate is going to be then.
Let's assume they're both equal.
They're both equal. Again, you're probably looking at, depending on who the investor is, you're going to be looking at investment to value. So I may say, I don't care what it is, I'm looking at a 70% maximum investment to value. There's always going to be, and so let's kind of run through this. So just round numbers. We're selling a house for $100,000, and you have a buyer that's going to put down $30,000. So now you've already got $30,000 down, so you're at 70% of value, assuming the value is $100,000 as well. They have great credit. You do it, you amortize it over 20 years versus 30 years, and you do it at an 8% interest rate. That's not going to be an ITV quote. That's going to be a yield quote. So if I'm looking to make a 12% yield or a 12% return, my price is going to be whatever, my buy price is going to be whatever that is. But if I've got Bob Bullinger who's wanting a 14% return, then his buy price or his price is going to be different. It's going to be lower than mine, and I'm looking at a 12% return. And I can tell you that there is no hard and fast rule with any note investor that I know of that's going to say, yeah, if you do it like this, we'll buy it at this, because there's always all of those six pillars are never all, it's not, they're always not going to look the same. So if you've got, and here's the play, and here's kind of how you can think about this. So you've got versus, so you've got 30% down. Let me back up one more time here. So we've got $100,000 sales price. We've got $30,000 down. We've got a 12% interest rate for 20 years. So if you find a buyer that is at a 12% yield that'll buy at a 12, they would pay $70,000 for it, right?
Right.
Nobody is really going, there's always going to be some kind of discount. And the reason that is basically if I buy it at par, if I buy it at $70,000, then what's going to happen is if it pays off early, I'm not going to make any money. So there's always going to be some type of discount. So you can never reach equilibrium where they're going to, or somebody's going to pay a national note investor 100% of the, there's always going to be some discount. Now, that doesn't mean that there wouldn't be a local investor there that you sat down with and say, look, you know, these guys are going to create these at 10%, and you want to make 10%, so you know you'll sell them for dollar for dollar. It wouldn't be a discount. So I can't tell you, I can't give you, there is not a number that is going to make it where it's going to be always equal and always going to be the same.
So I think what I'm hearing is there's no way to run the numbers without knowing what said note buyer is going to want in a given situation.
Right.
So before, okay, so I guess in this particular situation, we'd have to run the credit of a buyer, of a property buyer.
Mm-hmm.
We'd have to evaluate all the properties, show the numbers to a note buyer, get a quote, and then go back to the property seller to see
if
it's a good deal or if it works for him.
The other part of that is, are they going to do a table funding? And I can tell you Colonial's not going to do a table funding. There's First National Acceptance Corporation up in Michigan. They possibly will do some of those. Hold on a second. Let me find somebody on the call here. Hey, Dave Fernecki, how are you?
Hey, Joe, how are you?
You've been listening to this. Is FNAC, are they doing table fundings at this point?
No, they have the buyer or the seller sign off, whether it be in a title company or a notary. The docs are overnighted. They review them, and then they do fund right away after that, typically within 24 hours.
Which okay. Means
it'll be a check or it'll be a wire, but they are very good about paying.
Good. And so you hear that. So what – and they've been around for a long time. So based on that scenario, you may go to First National. And there – are they in – I can't remember. Are they in Michigan or are they in Minnesota, Dave?
They're in East Lansing.
East Lansing, Michigan. So just Google First National Acceptance Corporation. And, Dave, if you want to give him Mark your email address real quick. You guys can swap email and you can share some of your experience with them, because I know you've done some business with them, Dave.
Yeah, I've closed probably 10 deals with them. My email address is dave@capstonecapitalusa.com.
Did you get that, Mark?
I'm scribbling.
Okay.
CapstoneCapitalUSA.
.com.
All right. Very good. Thanks, Dave.
Feel free to contact me, and we can discuss whatever. I'm open.
Excellent.
So does that help you out and give you a little better direction than we started with?
I can't say that at this point, but maybe.
Well,
maybe that could. I'll figure out a process.
Give them a call. Talk to one of their note buyers. And you know, I had a relationship when I was, you know, when I first started in the note business with the FSB Bank in Little Rock. And what we did back then is I knew that if I if the credit score was whatever it was, and I charged this particular interest rate, and there was, you know, this much money that was put as a down payment, and this was the term, I knew that they would pay, you know, 95% of whatever the note amount was. So it was a $100,000 note. I knew that they would write a check and do it within 24 hours, and it would be a $95,000 pay price for the $100,000 note. But it had to be originated to their guidelines, and then you had an immediate buyer for it.
Yes, that's those are the specs that I'm trying to understand. Yeah. So that when we talk to the
Colonial just isn't really a buyer for something like that. With brand new notes, it's just not the direction they want to go in. It's pretty much seasoned notes. So contact them and speak with them. Is there anybody there you deal with, Dave?
Yeah, her name is Hannah Gingery.
Okay.
G-I-N-G-E-R-Y, Hannah. She's a good gal. She flew here to Phoenix to meet with me with her boss, Dan Malcolm.
Wow. Okay.
One point with them, Joe.
Yep.
They are so slow.
I got it.
And they pay no heed to Dodd-Frank.
What? What does that mean? No heed?
They don't care
if they're Dodd-Frank compliant or not.
They don't even ask. They don't look. They don't. There's no conversation other than what I tell them. They never drill down on that point.
Okay. Oh, so that's a good thing actually for us, for a broker, right?
Well, here's the thing. You know, you don't want to be named in a law. You don't want to be sucked into a lawsuit. So that's one of the things. So you still need. And what it sounds like that you're dealing with here, Mark, is this isn't a Dodd-Frank issue anyway. You're going to have an investor buying investor properties.
Sure.
Investor
note. Sure.
Now, if you were dealing with a consumer that's buying one off one house and they're going to live in that, for your protection, you would want to make sure that you had them qualified with an RMLO. And Dave, I'm sure that you're doing that as well.
Yes, I am. The other thing, Joe, is that if it's an investor to investor property, they'll price that lower than if it was a residentially occupied property.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, they're all, yeah, everybody, I mean, you've got a different price for a non-owner-occupied note than you do for a property with a note that's occupied by the owner. It's always going to be
right.
Less. Yeah.
Okay.
Very cool. Dave, I'll circle back around to you in just a minute, and like I said, we may have to get to that other thing on Monday, but let's see how it goes here. So, Mark,
okay.
That would be your next step, and just understand that, you know, I don't want to say it's a messy business, but there's never an absolute in it, but that's as close to an absolute as you're going to get.
All right. So did I understand that correct? You guys were saying that a note buyer will pay less for a note on a loaded rental than they will on a owner-occupied property?
Well, now, see, if I am selling to an investor a non-owner-occupied property, ceteris paribus, all things being equal, yes, it would be less. But when you're doing a loaded cash flow rental where you've got a highly qualified borrower in that you've got an investor that's going to put 50% down, and it's a short term, it's a 5-year, 6-year, 7-year note, no, that's not going to be an issue because the down payment is going to trump everything else.
Okay.
I mean, that's the big thing about the 50-50 model. It is a big down payment, 5% interest, so it's a low interest rate, and it's a 5-year, 6-year payout. So, again, when you look at trying to discount something like that, the discount is going to be almost nothing.
Very good.
All right. And if you have any follow-up questions, just send them in and we'll get them on Monday, okay?
Okay. Sounds fine.
All right. Very good. Before we move to the next, I've got a couple of questions here that were typed in. So, let me get to those. Let's see. Wallace... Bob, I see your note there, and we'll get to Jackie's thing in just a few minutes. So I've got you there, and I'll put you on. Wallace Wong, brand new student, first time on the webinar. Where do I download the technical spreadsheets? And so send Wallace, you want to go ahead and send Zarina an email, and she will send you those spreadsheets so that you can use those as well. So Wallace, it's Zarina, Czarina, Zarina at noteschool.com, and she'll take care of those for you. Lisa, I saw that. Why not sell them off in bundles? And that's another opportunity there. Buddy, you're exactly right. It could be a great 50-50 candidate. And those notes would be very easy to sell because, again, they're a huge down payment with typically an investor that's going to put 50% down. You're not really worried with a credit issue. They're going to have good credit anyway, and it's a short payback term. So, yeah, that would be a great candidate there. And Lisa says, remember about location issues too. Yep. And that may or may not be an issue there as well. And Lisa says, hey, Dave, help him on this deal for a share of the profits. That's what I do. So, Dave, Mark, you guys talk and see what you can do. That's entirely up to you guys there. Okay. All right. So let's get to the next question here, or the next topic here. Okay. Let me zoom down. And I think this is Bruce, maybe. Kevin Moen. Okay. Kevin, let me find you on here, and then we will we'll get this taken care of. Give me just a second. Having trouble manipulating here today. Kevin, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, Joe, how are you doing?
You know, I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing really good. Thank you.
Very good. So what's going on out in your neck of the woods?
Well, in my neck of the woods, I'm working deals on the other side of the country. This one is, let's see, I submitted two. I'm trying to make sure I'm thinking of the right one here. Okay, so the one you have pulled up right now is an REO that I bought in Oregon, Ohio.
Okay.
And the whole model was going to be to just seller finance it as is. It needs some repairs, but handy people or whoever can move in there and start doing it themselves and get seller financing to help them do it. So we've been marketing it, and we found what I think is a really good buyer. I have an actual agent that's working with me on this, so he found her, and he's been communicating with her. But from what he's told me, she owns a house, and she wants to buy this one, fix it up, and then sell the house that she's currently living in.
Okay.
The only challenge is, to be quite frank, I had an issue, and I had an error in my calculator, my spreadsheet that I was using to try to figure out what a good price point would be and all that. And so at first, I was thinking seller financing for $30,000, taking $3,000 down, and then selling that note at a discount to either Colonial or some other buyer. Would be good. And then I realized there are some things that I weren't calculating correctly with closing costs and other things, where if I did that exact model, I would really be almost breaking even and not making a whole lot.
Right.
So what I went back to my agent and said is, I said, hey, what if we did a balloon? And since she's planning on selling her house, that shouldn't be much stress. Well, they agreed. And then I realized, oh, that's not Dodd-Frank compliant. So I can't do that.
Well, let's kind of talk about that just a minute. I mean, there are certainly credible rumors that we can add a balloon into a sale now if there is a very good chance that the borrower will be able to take that out. So Number one, what does that really mean? And this was kind of what they've done this for, or small investors or small lenders. And a small lender, as classified by this, was a lender that originates less than or 2,000 or less loans per year. So I think we fall into that category. And the reason this came to being is because a lot of the smaller lenders said, look, this whole thing is, we can't do 30-year loans and risk, you know, holding them for 30 years. They're harder for us to, you know, all of that. So if the borrower has decent credit or good credit and has a very high, it's a very high probability that they're going to be able to take this out, which I don't know what her credit looks like, but she's selling another house. So certainly she, you know, should be able to pay this off if that happens. So I don't think that may or may not be such a big deal for you, depending on what that borrower looks like. Okay.
Well, then let's talk a little bit more about that real quick. So I'm having National Asset Mortgage do the financing and the underwriting.
Okay.
And I talked with them about this, and they basically said that, yeah, you don't, it's not that you can't do it, but they said it's going to be a lot more headache and a lot more expense on their end and all that. And so I'm still open to the idea. You know, we can certainly discuss this here on this call, but my other thought was, well, I guess in the situation maybe it would be powerful, but I always hear Eddie and Bob and whoever talk about, you know, what's the value of a balloon? It's really only valuable when it pays. And maybe in this case it does make sense to go through that expense and everything since she's planning on selling a house. But if someone doesn't have really the means to pay that balloon,
well, that's exactly right. And that's where we have to go with this. I mean, the value of a balloon, again, is only valuable if that borrower can refinance it. If not, what you're going to do is you're going to have to modify the loan for them and take that balloon out. Okay?
Right.
So if you looked at that credit now and they have a great credit score and they're, you know, they've been doing really well and you think that they may be bankable, well, then the loan would be, you know, the balloon would be appropriate. But if they don't, it's not worth the paper it's written on. And
right.
what Eddie and Charles and Bob are saying, really, it's exactly right. If they don't have a good chance of being able to refinance out of that balloon, then you're just going to have to modify it anyway. I mean,
right.
If it were an investor, it may be a little different. You could say, okay, well, I'm going to foreclose. You know, I'm just going to go ahead and foreclose because you have this balloon and you can't, you know, you can't make it. You got to refinance. You got to pay me off. But when you've got a consumer in there, it may not be a big deal. The only other thing you could do on this, Kevin, and I know what you're trying to do is you're attempting to get your money back out of this, and put a little money in your pocket at the end of the day.
Well, especially because I have a partner on this who needs to get paid out within a year, so I was trying to get a little quicker, either selling a note or a balloon that way.
Why wouldn't we try to go in then and sell a partial for enough to, you know, pay the investor off?
It's definitely an option. I'd have to run the numbers and just, that's definitely an option though. The other thing I guess I was going to ask, you know, I think that I'm going to look back into that balloon and get more details from National Asset about what the real costs and headaches associated would be, because it might just be worth it. And I'll do some numbers on the partial, but is there any other creative thing like just writing into the note itself that the payments increase, not necessarily like an arm with the interest rate, because I'm already basically at the top of what's allowable for interest, but can you just write custom things in, like after 2 years, the payments, the principal amount owed doubles, or is there anything kind of creative and one-off like that could be also written in that would just incentivize them to pay
off? Now, is this lady a consumer? She is a consumer, so she would be.
Yeah, she's going to live there. Otherwise, I'd have a lot more options.
Yeah, right.
But she's planning to occupy the property.
You know, Kevin, you and there's nothing that says you can't do an adjustable rate. It makes it harder to service for a servicer, but there's nothing that, you know, wouldn't say that, or you could have them. Go ahead.
The challenge with that is, if I understand correctly, there's only maximum interest rates that you can charge for a consumer. Is that correct?
Well, that's going to be by. You're going to have to look and see what your, you know, what it is in Ohio, and I'm not sure. I can't remember what it is in Ohio.
I looked it up, and it was like, if I read it correctly, it was like 8%, and that's what I was planning on writing the note at.
Right. That is on a real estate or a mortgage loan. Is that correct?
I think so. I was reading the legal language, and it looked like it said that the maximum amount that a mortgage could be written out was 8%, and that there are several exemptions, but none of those would we qualify for.
Right, right. Yeah, so I'll have to look into that and make sure that that's what that is, because I know of people that are selling, doing seller financing in Ohio, and they're charging more than that. So I'm not sure.
Okay.
You know, we'll have to look into that a little deeper and kind of figure that out. But you could have it where she would make regularly scheduled principal reductions. And so maybe instead of a balloon in the deal, you put in the agreement or in the docs that when she, if she thinks she's going to sell her house within 12 months, so in 12 months she would make a one-time $5,000 principal reduction. Could you do that? Sure, you can do that.
Sure. The only downside is I'd want to charge a little more up front, and we're basically at the maximum, like, debt-to-income ratio, I guess, is what
right. The
underwriter was thinking, so I can't really charge her more for this house. It just
right. Kind
of worked out
right.
well for her that way. But that's not a bad idea. It's definitely a good idea.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. I mean, if you're sold on this particular buyer, then you know what your options are, and that's going to be your decision that you're going to have to make, that since I know what this
sure. Is,
this is the max I can do, this is the way I've got to do it.
Yeah, and I just really like this borrower because she owns a house already. She's obviously relatively financially responsible, and the fact she can cash this out so quick. I mean, if we put a balloon on this, we'd make a really nice return because we only have about 15 into the house right now.
Right.
But if we were to sell it at a heavy discount for what like a note trader would be looking for, that's where we'd be like breaking even, and it wouldn't
right.
make a lot of sense to do that.
Right.
While we're on this page, because I think you've got good experience to answer this, Joe, I keep buying and holding properties. I haven't sold a whole lot. And my question is, besides I'm going to pay my agent a commission, and I already know that ahead of time. I have to pay National Asset Mortgage to underwrite that loan, and I'm assuming I'm going to pay an attorney for running title and all that. What other kinds of closing costs could I expect from that sale?
Whatever the recording fees would be. Which shouldn't be a whole lot, and you National Asset Advisors should be able to give you a sample closing statement, you know, before the
yeah.
you know before the closing. So you're paying them, so you certainly need to get all you can possibly get out of them as well.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, what are they charging you to underwrite this loan?
I think it's only like $500 is the fee for this.
Okay.
Which I thought was pretty reasonable.
And they're going to get the 1003. They're going to run credit. They're going to do all the underwriting that verify the debt to income ratio, verify employment.
They've already done all that for her, yeah.
Okay, and that that's a great price.
I thought so.
Yep. Yeah. So again, you shouldn't have. You've already had a BPO done, and I'm sure. So you shouldn't have much more than. I mean, I would say no more than $1,500, including the underwriting fee to National Asset.
Okay. So. Because you do have an attorney run title and all that. I mean, that's part of that then.
Well, the title insurance is what you can do title. It's a lender
right.
policy is what I would recommend doing, absolutely. And then
okay.
making, then she would buy a borrower's policy.
Okay. So, yeah, because I put $2,000 in there for that, so I think I'm pretty safe there.
Yeah, I think you are too, yeah.
All right, cool. Well, yeah, it gives me some ideas, and definitely, I think this is going to be a good deal. It's kind of neat that we bought it and didn't put a dime into it besides insuring it, and then we're going to turn around and sell it for $30,000 on seller financing. So really shows the power of understanding finance and all that you guys are teaching us.
Very good. So let me just chime in here. Dave Franke said after 5 years, you're going to add 2 points to the interest rate. Bob Bullinger says that if she is also an investor where owner-occupied restrictions don't apply, could the buyer with her could she buy with her LLC business and then gift deed it to herself? I wouldn't get involved in that, Bob. I just think that's if it went south, then any attorney would say the intent was to get around the Dodd-Frank or the SAFE Act.
I'm not so sure she's an investor anyway, so I don't think that.
I mean, really, I mean, it's like we say, the best time to worry about a loan is before you make it. And any time you try to circumvent that, that's going to be so transparent down the road that you're just going to lose. I mean, there's not even any thought process that goes behind that. So, and then Dave Franke did say, I thought that Dodd-Frank states interest rates can be 6% over the prevailing rate. So, so, but again, you've got to look at their debt to income ratio. So the debt to income ratio is what's controlling this at this point, Dave. Dave did also say that, and I've been doing this as well, and have the buyer sign an owner of an owner occupied certificate, just to certify that she is the owner occupant in this house as well.
Yeah.
Okay, so keep us informed on this and let us know how this moves forward.
Yeah, we'll do. And I was running the numbers because I talked to Bob a while back to kind of see what you guys would or Colonial would be willing to pay for a note like this if it was seasoned for 6 months. And it's a pretty decent discount, but I think if I start marketing it to other buyers on a buyer list that I'm building myself, that I could give them like a – they could get like a 12 yield with like a 20% discount on the note. And if
–
I'm sure I could – well, let me ask you, do you think I could find – a buyer at a 20% discount when there's equity in the note versus the actual value of that, because the BPO was like 30 grand on this house.
Right.
And a $3,000 down payment I thought was pretty strong. And so if I sold it for 80 cents on the dollar with like 6 months of seasoning, I think that'd be a pretty good deal.
Let me tell you something. Let me tell you something, Kevin. You would have local investors who would probably who would do this at a 10% yield or a 10% rate. So your discount doesn't you're not locked into a if you're originating it at 8, you're not going to have to discount this 20% to get them up to 10 or to get them up to 12. So and I didn't see what the AM period on this was. How long are you AM out?
20 years on this.
20 years. And again, but you're capped out now by the debt to income ratio. So you capped out her payment at her max payment. So you can't, shorten the term to make that any better or lower the rate. But I'm very certain that you can find some local investors that would buy this at a ten rate all day long.
Okay. Cool.
Very good.
Yeah, and I was gonna do a land contract, so I think that's even stronger too.
Yeah,
that's
a little stronger as well.
All right, great.
All right, so we're good. Let us know what's going on with it.
All right, we'll do.
Thanks, Kev. Todd Richards says, who determines or how is it the prevailing rate of 6% over current rates? Here's the whole challenge with Dodd-Frank and SAFE Act. And we don't know that there has been any case law that we could look at this point that says this is the way that the ruling is going to be interpreted. So, there just hasn't been that case law where we can point our finger at it and say, okay, this is what's going to happen every time. So we've got to be very, we've just got to do it by the book and not try to circumvent this whole thing. And by doing that, we want to just make sure that we're following those specs to the max. Okay. So that's where we are with this. And until we get some case law in here, it doesn't really matter. So, okay. So let's see, looks like we've got Bruce, and let's see if Bruce is on the call. Bruce, I don't see Bruce on the call today. Let's go ahead and talk over his in case he's going to listen to the playback later here. So let me do this. All right, and Dave, I'm going to bring you back in on this here real quick, and we're going to talk through this. All right,
okay.
Okay, so we have a lady that Bruce flipped houses prior to becoming a note school student, and he has a lady that has $25,000 to put down, so she's got a real strong down payment. House is $70,000 as is, and of course she would like to get it for a little less, obviously, needs some improvement. Property is in Florida. She's on Social Security. She will use her tax return money, whatever that is, to come up with some of the down payment. Her husband, this is some good details here. Her husband threw her out on the street. She's living with her sister. How can I make this work? She can make $500 on her own and $750 per month if the daughter lives with her and is willing to do this. They purchased the house for $55,000. Well, and Dave, you're probably looking at this right now saying, okay, here's the deal. We've got a house. She buys it for $70,000 as is. She puts $25,000 down. So we're creating a note on this for $45,000. Well, they've got $55,000 in the property. So basically what they're going to be doing and is that they're going to get $25,000 of their money back up front of their $55,000. And I guess the question for these guys is what can we sell, or the question for Bruce is what can we sell that note for once we create it? So, you know, here's the thing. Here's his thought process. Receive for money as a down payment. Sell on a lease purchase. It's not really, you know, not really a deal there. Create a note. Need help with the terms and interest rate. Sell off the first 5 years. We could do that as well. Use money to buy other notes. And we don't know if she would be eligible for, well, she's not the homeowner now, so she wouldn't be really eligible for hardest hit funds because she doesn't own the property right now. So, Bruce, what I would suggest you do, if you go back and you listen to this on the replay, bring some other things back to us as far as the interest rate. Since this lady is a consumer, it's going to be very important to see what she can afford on a monthly basis. So what's her debt-to-income ratio going to look like? Is it, and that's really going to dictate the length of term and the interest rate that we can charge, that you can charge her as well. So if you will, come back in and talk with her, and let's see what she can realistically afford on a monthly basis. And the rule of thumb you want to use for that is take her monthly gross income, and whatever 44% of that is, 44-45% of that is. So if she makes $1,000 a month, then $450 a month at 45% is what would include her house payment, her new house payment, as well as all of her installment and revolving debt. So that would include a credit card payment, a car payment, whatever, any other installment or revolving charges she would have. It wouldn't include her power bill, her cell phone bill, her life insurance or health insurance or anything like that. So that's really what's going to dictate this. And we'll kind of talk through that. If you want to send that in, we'll get this back on the call on Monday evening. All right, now let's see. I'm going to get Bob Bullinger on the phone here because he was taking some notes for Jackie, who couldn't be on the call today. So, Bob, let me find you. There you are. Hey, Bob, how you doing, man?
Hey, Joe, I'm doing great. How was Chicago?
Chicago was cold, brother.
I thought so.
It was very, very cold. I was in Minneapolis the week before that. I picked all of these crazy northern states to work in January. I just thought I'd go ahead and knock them out of the way. I am going to Milwaukee here second week of February. But anyway, I haven't ended up sick. I've seen temperatures from 25 below up to, I'm in D.C. today, and it's probably 30, 35 or something like that. So it's all good, man. It's all good.
It is all good. But you can still have that cold weather.
What's that?
It's all good, but you can still have that cold weather.
Oh, yeah. So. I know. Well, see, I can go home. So I'll go home, and it'll be 85 degrees with no problem. And a lot
okay,
of humidity. Gotcha. Hey, what Jackie had asked about was, and I think she had another question as well, but we're just not going to have time to get to that one today, so we'll kind of bump it till Monday, and I'll be doing that call as well for Eddie. She was just trying to come up with a standard fee schedule as far as what she's doing when she's doing a deal or helping somebody put together a deal. And I just wanted to kind of look at this and give everybody else, some feedback on this as well. And if you're when you're dealing in the performing notes side of the business, the question is, so Bob, you own a note. The balance of the note is $65,000, and you get a quote from a note investor from Colonial or somebody else, and and they'll pay $55,000 for the $65,000 loan or the unpaid balance. What should you make as far as a fee for putting this together or acting as the middleman or the broker or whatever in this transaction? And
I think
go ahead.
I was going to say that would be dependent upon each individual, but
absolutely.
I think there has to be a bare bones minimum. What's our time worth? And it's not going to we take as much time on a $65,000, $70,000 note as $125,000 or even $150,000. So I think you have to have a bare bones minimum.
The $150,000 notes are easier to close. Usually.
Yeah,
well, you got a higher price property and they were pretty much all done by a title company or an attorney. So the docs are all in the same place. So yeah. Again, you could say 5%. Well, what's 5% on $55,000 on the quote amount? Well, it's $2,500. I certainly wouldn't do it for any less than $3,000 on any of it. And let me tell you, one of the things that the third note that I brokered back in 1991 or whenever it was, I just for some reason I asked the note owner. I said, look, what do you think your note's worth? And they gave me some ridiculous. It was like a 50% discount. And I was like, okay, well, I'm not going to clip you that hard because it was a great note. But I ended up making, it was a $75,000 balance, and I ended up making $14,000 on the thing. So if the seller tells you what they're looking for, then you can it'll give you two indications. Number one, they're full of it and they're never going to get, if the balance is 75 and they want 75, that's not going to work. Or they say, well, I won't take any less than $50,000 for it. And, you get a quote from an investor that says they'll pay $60,000 for it. Well, will I make $15,000 on it? So, as a minimum, I would always do a 5% minimum on the smaller notes. What Jackie has here is from 75 to 250. She's got 3%, and then it's kind of more of a sliding scale as she goes down. But again, for all of you out there that are, that are new in the business and do you agree with, does that make sense what I just said, Bob, that, you've got to kind of, each deal is going to be a little bit different and you'll be able to tell up front, what the seller is like and what the deal's like.
I agree with having a bare bones minimum, and you just had a really strong golden nugget there to ask them what they think the note's worth. Because you can get a higher amount than your minimum, as you mentioned on your very first one, where you made that $14,000.
Well, and again, what that's going to do for you, so you and I are talking, you're the note seller, you're wanting me to give you a price, and you say, well, what's my note going to be worth? What's it going to be worth? And I'm going to say, well, Bob, let me just ask you this. You tell me your unpaid balance is $75,000. What do you think your note is worth? What are you looking to get out of that? And so he says, well, I'm not going to take any less than, Bob, you say, I'm not going to take any less than $72,000 for it. Well, it's a 6% note at, with 300 payments left on it. And, that there's no chance in heck that that's, going to happen. Or if they say, well, I'd like to get $60,000 on it, or I had a quote from somebody else for $60,000. So you can go in pretty quickly and say, okay, what is that other investor? What are they looking, what is their guideline, or are they full of crap or whatever it is? So it's going to give you an indication right off the bat as to what their mindset is. And I've just always done it with sellers, and it's going to be a moving target, but you're not going to do I don't care, if it's a $10,000 note, you're not going to do it for $500. I mean, it's just, you've got to make a little money on this. You're offering a service. So what you're going to do is you're going to get paid, something for doing that. And I just think a minimum fee is $2,000, but it really depends on, the sliding scale as it goes up. So, all right. So, I think, again, it's great to kind of have something like this, and Jackie is very detail-oriented, but again, I'm just saying that it's going to be, you're going to get whatever you can get. So it's going to be kind of a deal that you're going to make your market there. And Dave, mm-hmm. I have got you unmuted if you want to say something.
Yeah, I didn't want to interrupt, but okay. What I've been pretty much figuring is 10% on something 40 and up, and then anything less than 40, I play with it, and it's been working. But the real conundrum is with what you stated were, if the note's at 75 and they say they want 72, how would you respond to that?
Well, you're going to have – at that point – And you should have asked them by then, you know, tell me a little bit about your note. You know, how did you
agree?
You know, what it is. And you know that if it's a 6% note and it's, you know, 30 years and there's 25 years left on it, you know that it's bloom. I mean, you know, the discount's going to be half. So your $75,000 note's worth 40 grand. So
right,
you know that
right.
You've got some work to do, and then you've got to go in and you've got to do like Eddie says. You've got to talk them off the ledge and talk them through the situation. And it may be that, you know, you suggest the partial and you go through that process and how it looks. And you know, again, they're just, you know, if they're going to sell it to a national investor or even a local investor, they're not that small of a discount just isn't going to happen, and you know, you've got to make some money on it as well. So you know, they're asking 72 and you want to make $5,000 on it, well you're down to 67 and you just know it's not realistic. So those are the ones you've just got to go through that whole process of here's how we value a note and here's why.
Got it. Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
And Dave, can we do this? Can we bump your other thing until Monday? Will that be okay?
Well, it's totally fine. And that's perfect. It's good. Put it on there. Do I need to send that in, or will you just put
it
out there?
Go ahead and send it in to Matt and just say, hey, let's get this on. Again, Joe said let's put this on the Monday call.
Okay. Good enough.
Very good. Okay, so guys, Bob, thanks so much for being a color commentator today. Thanks all of you that pitched in. We will have the call on Monday evening again. Make sure and send in your content. And please, anything you have questions on, let's make sure and get it in a timely basis. And let's get as much backup with it as we possibly can. Everybody have a great weekend. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you Monday night. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you, Bob.